France has an embarrassment of riches when it comes to ornate palaces and gilded elegance. It also has some of the most impressive evidence of prehistoric people that you can find anywhere. Mark Seymour has been with us previously on Travel with Rick Steves to tell us about the ancient stone circles in England. He's back with us today to explain what the stones have to tell us in Brittany. That's the weather-beaten Celtic region of northwest France where Mark lives now. Mark, good to have you back.
My pleasure. Nice to be here.
Now, Mark, if you're looking just for the best place for ancient stones, you know, Stonehenge kind of stuff, where in Europe do you go and why?
Personal favourite has got to be Brittany. There are so many of them in the landscape.
The west tip of France.
Northwest tip of France, yes.
And these are Celtic people, like historically the people in southwest England, and the Welsh and the Irish.
It's populated by people that claim a Celtic ancestry and Celtic lineage, yes.
So you're going to Brittany then, and what's the word you look for on the map? Where are we going for these stones mostly?
The icon of stone searchers would be Carnac in southern Brittany.
C-A-R-N-A-C.
N-A-C. Carnac. A World Heritage Site, and there are in excess of 4,000 standing stones.
So you go to Carnac and pick up a guidebook or just go to the local tourist information office, hire a local tour or something, and you can see all the Stonehenge kind of stuff you want in France.
In France, yes.
Now, just a glossary, Mark. We always hear the word megalith. What is that?
A megalith has a dual meaning. It's basically a single standing stone.
Literally, it'd be big stone, megalith.
Big stone.
All right, and dolmen?
Dolmen is a Breton word, and it basically means a table. So this would be
a standing stone with something on the top of it.
With a big stone on top of it, yes. Yeah. Normally at least three pillar stones.
So maybe like a stool with two big stones and a table on top. Would that normally be some kind of a tomb, marking a tomb or a holy spot?
It would have been. Many of them actually, in prehistory when they were first erected, they would have been burial sites and they would have been enclosed. It's just that a lot of the stones have been stripped.
Yeah, so in Western Ireland, there's a famous dolmen. It just looks like somebody set up a kind of a tripod there, it was actually underground until the erosion came and exposed it.
That's right. I mean, three-legged mushrooms covered in soil, probably chalk, sometimes clay, allowing the grass to grow back over them.
Another word we encounter a lot is menhir, M-E-N-H-I-R. What is that?
Again, a menhir is a single standing stone.
So a menhir is a megalith.
Yes.
Now, stone circles, there must be 100 of them probably all over Europe, and if you know where to look.
You'll find more stone circles in Britain than you will in other areas in Europe.
So we know Stonehenge, and a lot of people know Avebury, but really there's a lot of obscure ones. You're from Dartmoor. One of my favorite ones is at Gidley.
Yes. Lovely. And ancient.
Man, you know, you go to Stonehenge, you got port-a-loos, you know, what we'd call port-a-potties, and you got tour buses, and you got barbed wire, and you got the information center.
Yeah.
But you go hiking across Dartmoor, you find your own private stone circle.
You will trip over them. I think the numbers taken are throughout the British Isles as a whole, there are approximately 1,300 stone circles.
Whoa.
That's not including menhirs or dolmens or megaliths.
Right.
That's just stone circles.
Now, how old is all this stuff?
Approximately, depending on which part of Europe we're talking about, approximately 10,000 years B.C.
10,000 B.C. Yeah. And Stonehenge, for instance, would have gone back how far B.C.?
Stonehenge would be approximately 35 to 4,500 B.C.
So older than the first pyramids. The first pyramids were 5,000 years ago.
Absolutely.
3,000 B.C.
And many of the stone circles and megalithic remains in Brittany are actually older than many of those found in Britain.
Oh, is that right?
Yep. Approximately 1,000, 1,500 years difference for some of the cultures.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about prehistory in Europe, and we're joined by Mark Seymour, who is a young man surrounded by old stuff in Brittany and in South England. Mark, when you're thinking about all this prehistoric stonework, you got these underground passage graves and long lines of stones, aligned rocks. Talk a little bit about that.
They're marvelous. Again, you can find them all over Europe, particularly in the northwestern coastline of Europe in wild landscapes. Passage graves have come under various names. Burial mounds, they are basically.
What is a passage grave? Why passage?
If you can imagine, say, 20, 30, 40, 50 standing stones shoulder to shoulder with each other and then capped with other stones.
Oh, so it's a long line of stones that creates a passage, like
that's
a tunnel.
That's right, with a roof of stones.
Oh,
and then that subsequently would be covered in soil and turf or chalk.
And then you'd find, if you knew where to look, or once upon a time there were human ashes there?
Yep, absolutely. Human remains are still being found today. In many of them.
Now, aligned rocks. If you took an airplane over certain parts of Britain, and I imagine Brittany, you could see patterns.
Yeah, in fact, it's quite a puzzle. We don't understand. Karnak's a great example because there are three great alignments in Karnak.
Karnak in Brittany.
That's where we have those 4,000 stones.
Okay.
3,700 last count, but increasing every year.
So I understand there's like the line of stones would be a mile long every 20 feet. It, almost from the air, it would look like the lights on a runway strip at an airport.
Yeah, it's an amazing sight. And the three alignments, they're end to end. So you actually have three groups of stones. Some of the myths and legends attached to them are amazing.
It goes back 8,000 years.
Yeah.
So what's one of the legends?
It's lovely, actually. It's there was a druid who was chased out of his part of Brittany by the Roman legions. And just as he was chased into the sea, he turned around and basically swore at the Roman legions and turned them into stone.
Okay.
And of course, then you have those three Roman legions standing in line, nose to nose, in a place called Karnak.
And then you got these boring archaeologists that are going to give you an actual factual rundown on it. Who did these things? Who were these people that made this amazing stuff?
I'm a British person. I'm part of Great Britain, but I live in Brittany. And those two names are synonymous with what the Romans called the people who lived in these areas when Roman invaded what was Gaul and the British Isles.
Okay, so 2,000 years ago, these are the people that were there before the Romans.
Yeah, they called us the Bretons. They weren't the people who erected the stones.
No.
They were the people who were settling in those areas where the stones were to be found.
Okay, but who actually erected them? Because you had to have your act together to move these big stones. And, you know, the stones we see at Stonehenge, they came from southern Wales, I believe.
Yes, that's right. Yes, they
And these
did,
are
yes.
many tons each.
Yes, the Blue Saracens came from Wales. Yes, they are.
Do we know much about these people?
We know very, very little. Obviously prehistory, so nothing was written down about them. And archaeologists are struggling to ascertain whom they were and also where they came from.
You know, I was so into the whole wonder of these people when I was down in southern France visiting Lescaut and all of the great prehistoric cave paintings there, which go back to this period or even older. I remember going into one of these caves and the ceiling was just covered with paintings, very crude stick figures. But, and our guide said, "We're gazing at the Sistine Chapel of the prehistoric world." And I thought, these guys are prehistory. I've dedicated my studies to history and gaining an appreciation of the Renaissance and Baroque. But I really did gain a respect for the wonder of these people who we will never understand.
Yes. That's what dumbfounds me. Absolutely. You visit places like Avebury, you visit places like Callanish in the Western Isles of Scotland. There are some staggering places. Why did these people, how many of these people were there doing this?
And we'll never have answers, but we will gain a wonder that there was real people doing real things back when they didn't have iPods. But they knew what the stars were telling them because these things were done in alignment with the stars to help them know when to plant, when to harvest, when to party.
Yeah, with stone circles, that's definite. There are various alignments which are very, very accurate, which can be found within stone circles. With stone alignments, that's more of a puzzle. The alignments themselves don't actually align with anything, astrologically speaking.
Now, in modern times, we can look at this scientifically, but in the old days, it must have blown people away. It must have been rich opportunity for fantastic legends and stories they wondered who the heck built these things and what did it mean.
Yes, and of course, I mean, with the onset of Christianity in Europe, I mean, you have church leaders who are trying to integrate these old pagan beliefs and myths and legends into Christianity. And wherever you go, both in certainly in the southwest of England, Wales, Scotland, and of course, Brittany, you find these old traces of pagan myths and legends supplanted with an element of Christianity.
And I think it's interesting, all over Britain, who's the Saint Michael? He's the guy that is the sort of saint that beats down all the pagan
stuff. That's right.
So if you have a prehistoric holy site and you're going to come in there as a Christian, you're going to put a church right on top of that site. Furthermore, it's going to be a church dedicated to Saint Michael.
Yep. And what's more, you'll take any stones you might find in that area and you'll turn those into foundation stones for the church and cut a stone cross out of it, put it on top of the church or at the entrance of the village.
So you could derive, if you found some humble little church to St. Michael that was built who knows when, you know, you can derive it was built because this is an antidote to the pagan importance that was right in that spot.
It was built on a pagan spot.
You dig under a church dedicated to St. Michael, you're going to find
something very interesting, I hope.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Mark Seymour about prehistoric stones. Our phone number is 877-333-RICK. And Bill's on the line in Livermore, California. Bill, thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick. This is Bill. And hi, Mark.
Hello.
I wanted to share with you a couple other sites there. We were in Brittany for the month of September back in 2011. And besides going down to Karnak, and of course down in that area, there's other interesting sites. But one of the places that we enjoyed up north. We were staying just south of Brest on the canal. There's a site, the Carn de Brenais, which they claim to be one of the largest in all of Europe and one of the oldest. And it's got like about 11 burial chambers, sits on top of a mound overlooking the sea and the inlet. It's quite amazing and was covered over for many years. And then they started using it as a quarry before they really discovered that it was a significant site.
Boy, that's tragic if they start quarrying that stuff before they realize it's 20,000 years old or 10,000 years old.
Well, once they discovered it, they put an injunction, but the man who was quarrying it continued and actually apparently got arrested and for violating this site.
That was fairly recently, too, in our history, wasn't it? It was in the 60s that an injunction was put in.
Because it goes back to, like they say, about 4,500 B.C.
That's right.
And then the other thing I was going to mention, at Karnak, the interpretive center is very good because it actually points out the fact that because of the Ice Age, back when we look at it now and we look out and see the sea in places like I'm not too good with these French pronunciations, but Lac Mariquer, which is near the water, and then there's Gravenis, which is on an island. Both of those at one point were, the sea wasn't there. There were streams and things, but they were able to connect, and there's actually rocks, huge stones that they repurposed. And part of it, they used the Lac Mariquer in their big domed rock dome, and then another part was used in Gravenis. So it's
you enjoyed your trip, didn't you? How long?
Absolutely. We were there for a month. I actually took 3 different groups of our friends to these sites, and they it reminds me a little like going into St. Peter's. Every time we'd go to Karnak, everybody's jaw would just drop, and it's an outdoor experience, but it's quite amazing.
The one spot you mentioned at the beginning there was Barnet, and it is the most incredible stone cairn. It's made of red, hard limestone, almost akin to granite, and it's right on the westernmost tip of Brittany.
What is a cairn? You said a cairn?
A cairn is another megalithic structure. It's a pile of stones. I hate to put it that way, but it's a number of burial chambers.
C-A-I-R-N. Creating it like a stone igloo or something?
Like a huge stone igloo.
Because you see those in outside of Dublin, there's the famous one. Yeah.
Yes, and this one is approximately 200 feet in length and 60 feet high. It's like a small pyramid.
If you can think of a pyramid or an igloo with one entrance, and then one day out of the year, the sun shines through that entrance and illuminates the chamber right in the middle of it all. That's the mastery they have of all of this celestial stuff. I don't know if that one you're talking about does, but the one in Dublin
does. This one doesn't, but the one you're talking about, Newgrange. Amazing, staggering.
So, Bill, why not many people go to Brittany? And you went there for a month and you took your friends, and it sounds like you had a great time. Why did you go to Brittany?
Well, partly when I've been in Ireland, my family on my father's side is Irish. And when I went to Ireland, my last name is Britton, but it's B-R-I-T-T-O-N. And I read a book there and it said, well, that name may come from the Celts who then went back to Brittany, which they did, to kind of flee the Anglo-Saxons. And that it may come to the people that then came back to Ireland, and they came from Breton.
There you go.
And so I was kind of interested in exploring. I actually even I didn't see anything in the phone book, but I did see a utility vehicle with my last name on it driving along the freeway.
Great. Hey, Bill, we got to run. Thanks for your call.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
And Rebecca's on the line in Granbury, Texas. Rebecca, thanks for your call.
Thanks for having me, Rick and Mark. My husband and I will be traveling near Karnak at the end of September, and I was wondering if there are other sites that you could recommend us visiting, and if so, do we have to have any reservations in advance, or can you see them the day of?
No. I mean, these are all outdoor sites. They're part of the landscape. No booking, no reservations, no tickets.
Well, that's a relief when you've been in Paris or something, and you go out to Brittany. I doubt if you'll ever encounter any crowd problems in Brittany. Just bring an umbrella. I guess that's the only...
I'll also say, I mean, I do have my favorites. I've got Saint-Just, which is just north of a small town called Redon. It's about a half an hour, 35 minutes from Karnak itself.
Saint-Just,
J-U-S-T.
Saint-Just, basically.
Saint-Just.
And
Saint-Just.
Why is that your favorite?
It's to me, it's a stonemason's sample yard. If you can imagine some ancient stonemason creating these menhirs and standing stones 6,000 years ago, this guy decided he was going to put his wares out on display and sell them. And it's several alignments of stones are there, but they're made of everything from white quartz to red granite and everything in between. And it's quite staggering to see them on this ridge stretching off into the distance.
Now, Mark, if somebody's going to spend a week looking around Brittany and they want two or three towns to make as a home base, which couple of towns would make the most interesting and enjoyable home base?
Great question. Two I'll give you right away. There's one called, we pronounce it Josselin, J-O-S-S-E-L-I-N. It's mm-hmm. fairly central in Brittany, in the hinterland. A beautiful medieval town in its own right, but surrounded by many of these stones.
Right.
Another one is a smaller, even more attractive village called Rochefort-en-Terre, R-O-C-H-E-F-O-R-T. Hyphen E-N hyphen T-E-R-R-E.
Rochefort-en-Terre.
Little hillside town, again, beautifully medieval in essence, but surrounded by these stones.
And just like when I'm tooling around Normandy, looking at different Normandy landing sites or whatever, or tooling around the Loire, looking at chateau, I would imagine when you're in Brittany, it's nice to have the mobility a car provides.
Yes.
So you can get out and see all of these things.
You would definitely need a vehicle, your own vehicle, or rent a cottage or stay in a hotel for several days and get a bike. They're easy enough to access.
Rebecca, I hope that gives you some good ideas.
It does. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your call. Happy travels. I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been discussing prehistoric Europe, specifically in Brittany, with Mark Seymour. Mark, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You can share your travel impressions and memories with us in the form of a haiku poem. There's a link to send us your original haiku in the radio section at ricksteves.com. Here are a few great ones that we recently got that we think you might enjoy.
Here's what our listeners are writing about their travel memories in the form of a haiku poem. Jessica Bain from New York City sends us this haiku about a simple memory she carries with her from a visit to southern France. Sweet burgundy pearl, humble onion so sublime, only in Provence. Vanessa Zimmer Powell from Houston writes this about her experience at the popular Roman mineral water pools in western Turkey. Pamukkale pools, cotton castle, ancient cliffs, soft blue goddess gifts. Brian Alcorn of Thousand Oaks, California, sends us this memory that lingers from a road trip he took as a kid along California's Big Sur. Heaven's canopy, beneath boughs of oak and pine, the soil tinted green. And Alan Powell from Nashville shares this poetic memory from his travels. "We've arrived," she spoke softly in my tired ears. "It's time to explore." Summarize a moment or a memory from your travels in three lines of five syllables, seven syllables, and five syllables each. You'll find a link to send us your original travel haiku in the radio section of ricksteves.com.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington, by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick and Isaac Kaplan-Wolner. Thanks to Gretchen Straug for reading today's travel haiku. Our technical team includes Andrew Wakeling, Jonathan Lee, Chris Luchik, and Kate Mulhern-Graham. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. There's more online in the radio department at ricksteves.com. That's where you can listen again to any week's show, post your comments on what you hear, and send us your own original travel haiku or a short hometown brag that we might read someday on the air. We'll look for you again next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.
Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. The European Union received the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize for promoting peace, human rights, and democracy. Information available at euintheus.org.